This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the February 24th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you alongside Mike Hogan, a.k.a. at DRF Formulator. Mike, what's the latest?
Oh boy, I don't know. What's the latest? I guess the Derby trail's heating up. We had our first 50-point stakes race over the weekend, which we'll, I'm sure, dissect at length with Mr. Marcus Hirsch when he joins us. And, you know, it's just kind of an exciting time of year for following the races.
Things are definitely getting a little bit interesting, that's for sure, as the warmer weather. You can start to think about it maybe breaking through one of these days. On the show today, as you mentioned, we're going to have Marcus Hirsch to talk about those stakes and all the goings-on from the fairgrounds. And then a little bit later in the show, we're going to have Pete Dressens, a.k.a. Pete from The Rock, a.k.a. The Doc from The Rock. Pete is off to a fantastic start. He's a rookie on the NHC Tour who's already secured two qualifications to next year's NHC.
Wow.
And we're going to be bringing him in to talk about his recent successes and a world of other things.
The next Kinchin.
Exactly. It's Kinchin-esque. Though I had incorrectly written earlier in the week that he was the first player to earn two qualifications. I had forgotten, even though I'd written a piece about this, this is how scatterbrained I can get sometimes, that Chris Scotes had won an entry at the First Chance contest at Treasure Island, running second to Dave Gutfreund, and then on our very own DRF Bets contest the following week won in. So there are already two players with two entries. Going to try to do a little bit better of a job this year following everyone who's qualified. In other words, like every time, when everybody gets their second to say and they qualified for the second time, talking to friends at the NTRA, especially Michelle Ravencraft, about hopefully being able to get that info and present it in real time so we can watch this number grow from the 15 it is now up to the 500 or more that it's eventually going to be. I just think it might be a fun way to follow the contest circuit as the year goes along.
I like it.
Well, let's talk about a few races before we bring in Marcus.
Right, the most important race of the week. Right?
How would you describe that?
You know, rallies from the clouds. like dropped in at the top of the stretch like a shot.
All right. Now, for those of you who don't know, Mike Hogan, for some reason, has decided that it's a good idea to go on to Twitter and pick fights with people like me
who love
Zenyatta.
No,
and the horse he is referring to is her son, Zyconic, who did make a visually arresting move in the third race at Santa Anita on, it was Saturday, right?
On Saturday, correct.
Ends up getting third,
yes,
but looked every inch the horse. This was a 7-furlong race, looked every inch the type of horse who would excel going longer, got Twitter in a flurry. Tell me why you're clearly not as convinced as the rest of the world that Zyconic is the real deal.
Look, it's not that so much as I think what happens when you have a horse like Zenyatta, who is, let's face it, kind of a once-in-a-generation mare.
If not lifetime.
People want to see her produce foals and offspring that are as good as her, and frankly, it's almost impossible.
Sure.
So they're hoping each
time
this is going to be the one, right? So
famously, Cosmic won the previous foal. I don't know what's going on with Cosmic one now, but didn't they give away posters?
They did.
First start.
They did.
Talk about a jinx.
Well, not only that. Talk about if you want to talk about the definition of a horse that's going to be overbet.
Yeah.
If they're giving away posters with the admission, that horse is going to be overbet.
There was a funny conversation that day. I was speaking with Jonathan Kinchin at the time. We'll be back with us on Friday live here in studio at the DRF offices. And he, of course, famously has a tattoo of Zenyatta on his arm. And he wasn't going to play that day. And then he talked to me at the last minute about putting in this elaborate pick six play. He thought in his mind, the value is just going to be too good, and that, you know, as he texted me his play, he just wrote, "Forgive me, Zenyatta."
The whole thing
predicated upon beating that horse, who lost, but he didn't hit the pick six anyway. If you were wondering.
It's worth a shot because that's where you can maybe potentially create value. And look, Zyconic did run fantastically well through the stretch. He got a 65 buyer.
Slow.
I think the gallop out was probably 100.
It was a good gallop.
Or at least according to Twitter, it was 100.
It was a good gallop.
But, you know, I mean, those are the kinds of horses that are going to get bet really hard, stretching out, and, you know, the pace kind of collapsed in front of him. He had no speed going 7 furlongs. He's going to have no speed stretching out even further. They're ones I like, you know, and maybe he'll start running like his mom a little bit in the second start, but those are ones I like to try and beat at short prices going forward. That said, I would love, as a fan, for her to throw a horse that ends up being a monster. You know, it would be fantastic.
Now, I love the idea that on the podcast here, we play it pretty straight. You listen to some shows and there's like all kinds of crazy sound effects and stuff like that.
Boing.
There's one, the boing, etc. There is one sound effect I would love to have, and it's every time that Zenyatta comes up and we're talking about Zenyatta, that we could pipe in the Trevor Denman call from, unfortunately, from my perspective as a Zenyatta freak and lover, the one time she ever lost, the crestfallen Belaine from Trevor Denman for that piece. If we ever get a MIDI board in here and make the sound effects happen, we will have, okay. I think, probably the single most used one will be Belaine.
Although, I don't know, I'll probably be using the mountain climber from The Price is Right.
Which, what is that effect?
Oh,
yeah, that's good.
There's a few Price is Right ones I would like to use, but that's coming forward.
The day you discovered the David Lee Roth MIDI board online, you could have a whole David Lee Roth-themed podcast with the various, you know, exclamations. Did you see wasn't there a Super Bowl ad that used a bunch of those?
No, I didn't see.
I believe somebody else was onto that train. Yes. And you know, when we come up with a silly idea like that, it's like, oh, let's throw it on a podcast. Somebody else is like, let's sell a $1 billion commercial. Yeah,
exactly.
Perhaps we don't always shoot for the biggest targets.
Exactly. But, you know, Zyconic, look, I wish him all the luck. He could be a good horse. I don't think he finished ahead of horses that were running well at all late. And
you make the point about the figure. The jury is out, almost sure to be overbet. But as a racing fan, you don't begrudge people.
No.
So why are you trolling them on Twitter,
It
was a little trolling, sending out broodmare stats on Rachel and Zenyatta with 2 starters. So someone correctly pointed out to you, isn't it a little early that we're making judgments about these horses?
It's as my wife, the scientist in the family, said, it's an N of 2, you know. But to be fair, that is the total N that Rachel Alexandra will have.
She's done, unfortunately, with the problems she's had. They've decided not to breed her again, which I think is in the best interest of her.
Sure, it's a little premature, but this is all we're going to get from Rachel.
Right.
And she's off to a good start. Zenyatta, as she was known to do in her races, is broken a little slowly and has some catching up to do.
Well, she may come charging late. We'll see. And we'll see if Zyconic can be part of that hard charge. Another race at Santa Anita we wanted to talk about briefly, at least, also on Saturday. This was actually the payoff leg in the NHC Qualify and DRF Qualify contests. It was a stakes race. It was the Buena Vista. We talked about it here on the show. Do you have any takeaways from the Buena Vista?
Yeah, where's my 12-1? Pauline is left. 12-1 on the morning line. I tout her on the podcast. She didn't even pay $10.
Did you think it was too short to play, or did you think it was a mistake in the odds?
I'm going to be completely honest. I did not watch any races, and I did not make a single wager on Saturday. So I looked afterwards and realized, oh, she won. Oh.
Still, another nice winner for the podcast. You certainly deserve credit for that. I mean, to me, from a handicapping point of view, the takeaway is when Richie Baltus is going like this, do you leave anything he sends out?
Well, yeah. I mean, and, you know, this is one, the case I made was she was lightly raced. The one effort that she had against this level, she kind of ran off. I think that wasn't really her style. She's gotten good since the race, and in the first start as a 4-year-old, I saw potential for improvement. I just thought the price would be a little better. But
really quick, let's talk about another 3-year-old, Mike, before we bring Marcus Hirsch in to talk about these fairground races, and that's Unified, who ran on Sunday in the second race at Gulfstream and put on a show that a lot of people have been talking about on Twitter and elsewhere in the racing world since. What do you think about this horse, and what do we think is next?
Well, the interesting thing, you know, from a buyer perspective, this was the fastest performance by a 3-year-old of the year, save Nyquist's 100 that he earned in the San Vicente. So he got a 99 Unified and going wire to wire in that race. Broke like a shot, never looked back. I mean, he could be a good one. I don't know if I'm betting him in the futures for the Derby yet, but
that would seem ambitious.
It was certainly an impressive performance, and the horse that ran second to him, I'm not going to try and pronounce it. I'm not even going to try. The Shadwell runner for Kieran McLaughlin, he was good too. He was good too.
Mutarami would be my guess. I forget. I don't remember what Larry said. Yeah. Maybe Marcus knows. We'll bring him on here. Actually, let's bring him on now. Maybe he even watched this race. So he's been on the show before. He is a correspondent par excellence, handicapper par excellence. He gave out a whole bunch of winners last weekend. So I hope folks were paying attention. This is Marcus Hirsch. Marcus, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Pete. How are you? Hey, Mike.
Marcus, good to see you.
Doing very well. Now, do you, obviously, when you're covering a meet as closely as you're covering this Fairgrounds meet, how much do you get to pay attention to other races around the country?
To a great extent. I mean, I try to follow everything. And if I can't see it live, like Saturday, I was swamped, you know, trying to cover the stakes down there. But, you know, I'll go back and make sure I catch up on anything I missed out on.
Did you watch Unified's race at Gulfstream on Sunday? What were your impressions?
Well, I mean, he obviously is phenomenally talented. You know, I got to tell you, you know, these super fast debut winners, they are, you know, they don't have a great history. A horse named Bind comes to mind for Al Stahl and Claiborne Farm. That was a few years ago. I keep a running PP file, you know, from our database. And this, I mean, I still have him there because he was the best debut winner I ever saw. And that was the best race he ran. And that happens regularly, too.
This horse on last year. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah.
Curlin, though. Curlin was, you know.
No, that's true. I mean, obviously, you know, what you have is a horse that does something that most horses can't do. It's just a question of what they do with it from there, you know, how their raw talent translates to future racing. I think there's, just from watching the horse's race, I think there's a decent chance that he goes at least a mile, if not two turns. I mean, his gallop out, and obviously you don't want to make too much of gallop outs, but he galloped out great. And what it really looked like to me was he was still going really well into the turn, around the turn. He was very late to change leads. He did it just before the wire. And that's not a barn that you think of as, you know, they're just cranking down on the horses to get them to run super fast first out.
They often improve, right?
Yeah,
often improve second out.
I think he's very, very promising. But I can't imagine they're thinking Kentucky Derby. It would be way too much too soon, and that would be the sort of thing that could blow a horse's mind. There are plenty of good races, you know, for a horse like this to run in May and June, July. Point at Saratoga if you think you can make a race like the Travers or something like that. I'd be surprised if you rushed into the Triple Crown competition.
I think that sounds sensible. The race the other day was 6 furlongs. He's by Candy Ride out of a Dixie Union mare. That doesn't exactly scream the 10 furlongs, but you never know, right?
I think I looked up his pedigree. I didn't want, did either of you guys? I think there's a lot of speed on the female side, too. I think his dam was like a 6.5 furlong horse or something like
Union
that.
Union City was the name. I don't remember offhand. Mm-hmm. We'll have to play around with Formulator and do the deeper dive on that pedigree for the next appearance by Unified. But certainly one to watch and keep an eye on.
Yeah,
oh, for sure. Right. You guys were talking about Baltus and being unbeatable. Did I hear that at the end?
We were talking about the Buena Vista and the rationale for the price there being as short as it was and it being difficult to oppose him with much confidence these days.
That's a good segue because he had a pretty short priced horse in the Rachel Alexandra who ran like a skunk. So
it only works on the turf at Santa Anita.
Well, California, shipping for a lot of trainers for whatever reason, shipping is a game that they can be winning everything at home and be shipping, and it takes some time to adjust. We've certainly seen that phenomenon before.
Even beyond that, I mean, where are you shipping and how much experience do you have shipping there, and do you know what kind of horse it takes? And I think Fairgrounds is kind of a different place to ship for California people, and he hadn't done that before. It was totally against that horse, and I mean, I can crow about it now because she, you know, I was against her and I was against Air. I mean, I had a lot of good negative opinions over the weekend, which, you know, I think can be as beneficial as trying to get people to land specifically
100%.
On the one horse, you know, just saying don't play Aeroforce under any condition, and if you want to beat if you want to beat Stageway in the Rachel Alexander, we'll beat the second choice too, because she's got an even less chance. So.
What did you think of Stageplay going into the race?
Marks? I liked her. I mean, I if anybody follows the way I do selections, my step one is, I mean, it's always value for me. I don't care. I mean, obviously, I'd love to pick 38% winners, but that's never going to happen because I see too many races and I know too much about flaws in horses. And also, I just see more and more favorites getting, like, particularly getting way, way over bet relative to their chances. So
this being a great example of that.
Yes. Step one for me is to try to find reasons to oppose the favorite. And that's where I wanted to do a stage play. But, you know, looking at the competition, and I thought that in her last race, you know, she didn't get tired so much. This is the Silver Bullet Day, her first start at three. I didn't think she'd get tired so much as she just lost interest after making the lead so easily. And she looked to me like a horse that was going to move forward. And then I watched her train, you know, during the week, which, you know, that can be positive and negative. I thought she looked fabulous. So I saw her. I thought about it. The likelihood of her winning against this field is too great for me to reasonably say take somebody else. Because I won't do that just blindly. You know, like there's a tipping point. At some point, don't just say, oh, I'm going to beat the favorite. Because I don't think that's a fair way to do it either. You know, you don't want to lead people to that you don't necessarily want them to travel if they are trying to, you know, work with your opinion. So anyway, I picked her on top, and I really think that she basically had no chance in the race. The race is Saturday at Fairgrounds, guys, and I'm sure this has been well documented at DRF, and I'm sure you both noticed it yourself. It was a huge bias, okay? I mean, It was a major, major, major inside track. No horse that ran anywhere close to the way she ran, and she was 4 to 5 wide, I think, in the first turn, and similar on the second. I don't even really hold the race against her. She could win the Fairgrounds Oaks. It wouldn't surprise me at all, because the way the track was, to be outside and behind the whole time, it didn't matter. Like, she could have been Untappable, for instance. I don't think Untappable could have won. If Untappable that won the Rachel Alexandra when she was at her peak early in her 3-year-old season, I don't think she could have won the race with that trip. And that's how severe the bias was.
To underline that point, I heard Tom Amos on the Steve Bick show say that he actually spoke to track officials after the races and said, he didn't use these words, but the idea was the track was a joke. If there's something being manipulated to try to produce fast times that's creating a bias like this, it's not working. People aren't going to want to ship here if this continues to be the pattern on big days. And Amos thought he was the right guy to make the case because he felt like he was the one who benefited from in the Rachel Alexandra.
And in the Risen Star, Mo Tom was on the rail the whole way too, just that he got completely stopped and almost put over the fence. But I mean, the thing is, if they were trying to make it fast, the track wasn't even that fast. Right. And if you ask racetracks about this, they'll say they don't do anything different, okay? And in fairness, and I don't know if this was intentional, but the track was trending that way well before Saturday, which I was trying to note on DRF Live all week. Even before then, I mean, we had gone through a really slow period where times in the afternoon were very slow, workout times were slow, nobody was doing anything fast, and it was a totally fair track. But then on the Thursday before the Risen Star card, I saw a real change. The speed held, inside looked good, times were faster, the track was faster in the morning, whether this was intentional or whether it was just the course of events and just happened. But the fact is, we see it too often, not just at Fairgrounds, but at so many tracks, where the track changes on big race days, which is
it's insane, isn't it? No one looks at final times in that context. If you could do something with a racetrack to manipulate that would be one thing.
It doesn't make any sense. Who in the public is clamoring to see? I mean, these aren't time trials. They aren't people buying horses at breeze up sales. I mean, I don't know where the idea is that this is something that's appealing. And for people who are based, you know, at the track, and somebody like, say, Leah Giramonte, she sent her horse in early to get prepared over the track. And then the track they were preparing on for weeks isn't the same track they got, you know, the couple days before and the day of the race. I just don't get it. And I mean, you know, the track superintendent from Fairgrounds could, you know, write a letter to the editor or call you guys in 2 hours and say, well, that's great that you're having this conversation, but we didn't do anything to the track, and that's fine. But that's just the way it was. And it definitely affected everything that we saw happen. And I mean, that's why people are trying hard to contextualize the whole day. Like, take Mo Tom, for instance. So, I mean, where do you land on what he did? Because he was on the best part of the track the whole way around. But then he, you know, that horse Bistrea drift, you know, he was exhausted and the jockey was maybe not controlling his mount very well. He drifted down into him before the eighth pole and, you know, and hampered him badly. He lost his momentum. And so on the one hand, he overcame that trouble and was coming again, you know, got his feet back under him, galloped out in front. But on the other hand, he did all that, you know, with the benefit of racing well behind just a really taxing pace and staying on the best part of the track the whole time. Now, personally, I'm on the positive side with Mo Tom. I think it was another really excellent race for him, and I love the horse. I mean, I probably like him too much because I've developed a fondness for him, but just, you know, watching him train during the week, guys, it's crazy. This horse on Thursday galloped 1.75 miles. I thought he even went farther. Amos said it was 1.75 miles. I guess I'll have to go with him since I was going pole by pole. But so, okay, so I'm standing at the clocker stand at the half mile pole watching him. You know, so he came past there twice. The first time past, you know, when he was in his first lap around, I'm like, well, that's not much to look at. You know, I can't go with that. But then the second time around, it looked like he was going 40% faster, reaching out vigorously, and despite that being the end of a long gallop where he'd really picked it up, like it was very quiet because he trains right before the renovation break, not drawing a deep breath, and then he finishes and he starts, you know, bucking and jumping around. The horse has just I think he has incredible stamina, and if you go back and watch all his races, I think he's fiercely competitive. He's always trying to win. He's come forward in every race trying to pass horses and usually succeeding. You know, like I said, I'm going with the trouble was more important than being on the right part of the track, and that's a horse that I like going forward quite a bit.
I can't argue with anything you said. I think he's super talented. The thing that gives me pause, not in terms of him as a prospect, but in terms of betting, is it's one of those instances where you had a couple of things that lead, for me, to horses just being pounded at the windows the next time, that are sort of beyond our control. One is, and you pointed them both out, one is being with the sort of race flow. A lot of times people don't deduct points at all for a horse who's getting a favorable setup the way he did. And then the other thing, we've talked about it, we've joked about it on the podcast a lot, we call them the international bad trip horses,
right,
where when you have trouble, trouble late, people next time, they just assume.
I agree.
They not only credit the horse for the trouble they had, they somehow give, like, extra credit. And right, that's where you get to see horses who are, you know, 25% less, shorter
that's
on the board than they should be.
Definitely true. But I'm getting the sense, just from kind of gauging the response to this horse's race, and also the way he was viewed coming into it, is there's probably more skepticism about him than is merited. And he doesn't have big figures. And depending on who comes, I could see him being a fair price, despite those tendencies that are very real that you just mentioned.
Have you spoken to Amos about him since the race? Any word on how he's doing?
Yeah, he is fine. I fed him like 10 peppermints the next morning.
He looked ready to go around again?
No, I mean, that's the thing. He got cut. Bistrea, I mean, he really ran into him. He got him. You know, and he cut his right foreleg in that incident, and the initial concern was, you know, he had quite a bit of blood, and oh, did he get a deep cut in the back of his leg? Did it get into the tendon? But no, it was totally superficial. I don't think the race took much out of him at all. People are still calling him skinny, and he's not a large made horse by any stretch of the imagination. But he's gained weight since I saw him, you know, in January when I was last at Fairgrounds, and I think he continues to go the right direction. I don't think this race knocked him out by any stretch of the imagination. I think the race was good. I mean, I know people are like saying, oh, Forever Mo, you know, he ran at Saratoga, he didn't look like much. But, and then you got the Candy My Boy thing too, who was a close fourth. And those two horses ran in the same allowance race. Candy My Boy won, Forever Mo was second. And so I can see where people would be coming from saying, Well, if those, like, because Candy, my boy, is a horse that he ran for maiden 15 once, you know, in maiden 30, and he didn't look like he was much horse, but, and maybe this is all true, but the alternative scenario is that both of those horses have just vastly improved in the last couple of months. And I mean, come on, they're early season 3-year-olds. That's what happens, right? I mean, these horses grow and change, and some of them respond to what's being asked of them, and some of them fall by the wayside. And my take is that, yes, those two horses ran together in the allowance race, and they ran close to one another in the Risen Star, but I think they're both improving horses. I mean, that's why Forever Mo was even in the race. Al Stahl thought that after, you know, he went to Delta, he ran like crap in the jackpot on a sloppy track. It's totally excusable. He thought that after that race, he started to come around, and the allowance race was good, and then his works after that were even better. He said he was, you know, he's just started working like a different horse. And I mean, Al Stahl trained a horse named Blame, and he's trained some...
We were just talking about him.
He's had some really good horses. He knows what a good horse looks like, and he knows what improvement looks like. And I mean, I ended up picking the horse third because of, you know, I'm like, well, I can see it in him, and he looked phenomenal, you know, in the week before. So, and the same with Candy, my boy. I just think that's a horse that's really, you know, he didn't look like he was cut out to be much, but he's turned out to be a lot better, at least in the short term. And I personally, you know, like the Risen Star. There are a lot of times, even the last couple of years, I haven't liked the Fairgrounds races. I'm not a homer in that sense. I'm perfectly happy to say when these races don't look like much, but I thought the LeCompte was above average for that race. And until I'm shown otherwise, I'm thinking that the Risen Star is going to turn out the same way.
I got a few more horses out of this race I want to talk to you about. This, though, this one is a situational thing. It looked Bestreya coming over in the stretch. It almost looked like there was some race riding there, but you never see that on a horse who's beaten to try to impede another horse. What happened there?
I think the jockey just didn't, you know, he looked back and then he like let his horse do it.
Right.
I don't know what he was doing.
Almost like it was on purpose, I thought. I mean, I can't say that for sure. I'm not making an accusation, but I just didn't understand what
I
saw.
I don't think he did it on purpose. But and maybe, you know, not being on the horse, who knows? It's uncontrollable. Maybe he was lugging in, or I'm not quite Mr. Maldonado without knowing the details of what went on. Although Mr. Amos was, he was willing to entice him back.
Probably not very happy. I would say if somebody did that to
Well, because the thing is, when you're on a dead horse, and that's a bad word, but a tired horse, you know, you're supposed to stay out of the way. You know, don't run into anybody else is the thing. Yeah. Be careful. And that didn't happen.
It was strange. We've talked about this race forever without talking about the winner.
I was just going to say that. What was your take? What's your take on Gunrunner, both going into the race and coming out of this race? Do you see him as one that is now a player on the Derby trail, or do you still have your doubts?
Well, he definitely is a player in the sense that, you know, he's going to make the Derby field if he gets there, and he's an elite 3-year-old. I mean, there's no question that he is very talented. I mean, he may not have liked the mud in the Kentucky Jockey Club, which is his only subpar effort. And I think he's very athletic, very talented. I'll be surprised if he's a mile and a quarter horse personally. And he may be. He may prove me wrong. We'll know more, I think, after his next race. The thing now is he ran huge first time back off the break. Asbjørnsen said the day after, you know, we gave him a lot of work to try to get him a good foundation to avoid, you know, a bounce off of that race, because they knew he was, I mean, he felt really confident that he was going to run well. I know that for a fact. I'm surprised he drifted up to 5-1. He got down to 7-2 at one point, and I thought he might keep going that direction because there was a lot of steam on that horse. Now, he goes a mile and an eighth in Louisiana Derby, and I think he'll run well there. But if I were making a Kentucky Derby top five, he probably would be on the outside looking in, even though I think he's a very good horse. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm.
You talk about the betting in the race. I think some of the reason that Drift came in there for Gunrunner late was the tremendous enthusiasm with which the public was betting Aeroforce. You were on record of being against all week, and so in multiple venues. For folks who didn't get to hear that opinion, and for folks who didn't, you're missing out by not paying attention to everything Marcus has to say. You should be following him regularly.
If for no other reason than to make fun of me when I'm wrong.
There is that. But sum up the case against Aeroforce and tell me what your take is on where he goes from here.
listen, I think he's a really good horse, and I never thought otherwise. But, you know, the reason that it was easy to be against him is because, A, he was going to be running on a fast dirt track for the first time. He ran really well on turf and in the slop. That's all well and good. B, he was supposed to run the Sam Davis as his first race back, and he had an upper respiratory thing several weeks ago, missed a couple days, got over that, and everything was going to have to go perfect for him to make the Sam Davis. And then he worked and he scoped bad with mucus, I guess, in his lungs or trachea or something after a work. So they said, okay, we're not going to run the Sam Davis. He got to work again a week later, so he obviously didn't miss time from that. But, you know, he's running in a very tough spot and his first time back. So, I mean, there were just all these factors. And then, you know, I've watched the horse come in and train. He just didn't, you know, he didn't bowl me over with his physical presence. I thought, you know, he looked slightly light. I think that's just how he's made. But, you know, sometimes you see a horse that you're against and you're like, maybe I need to reconsider that perspective. But I did not have that sense with him at all.
Well,
and I thought that there was enough public knowledge of all this, all these reasons to be skeptical that he would not take that kind of action. But I mean, there's kind of this, there's a Cassie, you know, effect from late last year where I see all of his horses getting bet, you know, maybe to a little bit greater extent than they deserve. And that's no knock on the barn. And obviously they do a great job and they had a huge year and they're perfectly capable. But there comes a point when certain outfits, you know, they have this momentum and inertia in the mind of bettors, and you know, it's costly in terms of value a lot of times.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you know, you're knocking the horse, if you were hedging a little when you put out that stat that look, Air Force in four races has beaten 48 horses and lost to one.
No, I mean, I that's what I'm saying, Mike. Is, you know, he's a fine horse. If he, I think he'll go back. I mean, he could run in a race at that race at Turfway, whatever it's called now. Is it still called the Spiral? I mean, they've changed it so many times.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he might be a horse that would do on synthetic. And certainly his turf form is, it's hard to poke many holes in that. The only horse that beat him is Hit It A Bomb, and he ran a tremendous race in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, all I was saying is, you know, I got to say, you have to take into account the way the connections and people who are fans of horses and trainers and owners and all the whole, I mean, there's a lot of backlash, you know, because there's this sense of being a hater if you say anything about a horse like you don't like him, you know. Mm-hmm. And I try to always make sure that people know that I respect the animal and what they've done, and try to decouple that from saying I don't think that he's a good bet in this spot.
Right.
And that's really all that's all that was about.
Exactly. And Marcus, before we let you go, I wanted to talk international racing for just a minute. Of course, there's a big horse running tomorrow at Dubai.
Marking.
Maidan. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of bad bets.
Oh, that was a bad one, wasn't it?
one
people what you're talking about here, Mike.
Well, the horse was bet way, way down in his Dubai debut two Thursdays ago, and he dumped the jock at the start. New rider, I noticed, too. I guess they blamed Doyle for that. I don't know. Yes, California Chrome is...
I've heard of him.
He's giving 15 pounds to everybody, at least.
There was I don't know if you read the comments on your article, Marcus, but I read your article this morning about the race, and the lone comment there was $2 place and show on him. I think he'll get a good trip.
I hope that was sarcastic.
I don't know. No, it didn't. I don't know. We'll take a look and see what you think.
Well,
I had to chime in.
You know, it's like,
don't spend it all in one place.
Yeah. With, you know, negative interest rates from the Fed, you know, you can't get a lot of money back in normal investments. I suppose it's better than that.
As Harvey Pack used to say, you know, when somebody made the point about being certain horse being better odds than the bank, that the bank doesn't make you run around the block before you have to cash
precisely.
Your investment. So that's, but
in any case,
little,
though.
Yeah. Oh, you go ahead.
Yeah. He's taking the Curlin route. Curlin used a race like this in 2008 when he went early. They asked me to send him early, and he ran in the same kind of race. as a prep for the World Cup. I think it's a great route to go. I mean, even giving so much weight, it's hard to imagine him losing unless something goes horribly wrong. And it, to me, it's not a betting race at all. I'm interested to see how he performs. Everything I've seen of the horse and heard about him since he shipped over there from California seems positive. And I think he looks not just like a different horse from when I saw him get off the plane from England last summer at Arlington, where he was nearly skeletal, but he looks better than when he was in Dubai, when he was in pretty good form a year ago and ran second in the World Cup to the unlikely winner, Prince Bishop. So I think at this point, he's the horse to beat for the World Cup on March 26th. And I look for him to get a very useful preparatory race in tomorrow.
Who's he facing in this prep race? Is it anybody you've
bunch
ever
of
heard
horses?
Of?
Yeah,
just
a bunch of horses.
I mean, I hate to say tomato can, but is that what we're looking at here?
What you got to realize is they still have not really come up to speed with the transition from synthetic to dirt in Dubai. You know, they need to get a new influx of stock there. If you look at the day-to-day races, a lot of them are like 6, 7, 8 year olds who have been knocking around for, you know, there just aren't a lot of good dirt horses there yet. I mean, I think it's something that could change in the next couple of years. But when you talk about these horses rated 100 or whatever that he's facing on dirt, you know, they would be allowance horses pretty much if they ran in a race in the States. And I mean, just imagine what California Chrome would do to a typical allowance horse. I mean, whether you think he's overrated because of the Chrome effect or whatever, I mean, he won 2/3 of the Triple Crown and has come back and proven that, you know, he's a solid older horse. I think he's in line to have a really good year this year after a complete disaster of a 4-year-old season. So, you know, even
story.
Yeah, I mean, even considering all the factors, it's hard to imagine him being pushed too hard. But at the same time, you absolutely know that this is a means to an end. I mean, I couldn't see betting on him under any circumstances, nor could I see betting against him, really.
It's a race to watch. Now, will you be able to go over to Dubai in a few weeks, or are your responsibilities stateside going to keep that from happening?
No, I'm going. Jay Pridman goes to the to cover the Louisiana Derby, and we've got Bob Fortas down there who has been helping out all meet. So I think this is my 7th trip. I am be heading over, you know, the weekend before the World Cup races, and look forward to that very much. I really enjoyed. I had missed a year 2 years ago, and then I was back last year, and it went really well. It was a lot of work, but so many cool horses there. You know, Europeans and horses from Hong Kong and Japan. Fabulous racing. It should be great.
Do you recommend it as a potential trip for an American racing fan? Like, give a little window. I know you're busy working. It's not like you fully have a sense of what it's all about there from a fan perspective.
Yeah, you know, I really have no sense, to tell you the truth. But I could see it. I mean, the airfares this year were crazy low. I think I got a plane ticket for a $750 trip. I mean, that's obvious something, but they're $1,200.
Not bad. Not bad for halfway around the world to see that quality of racing, huh?
The thing is, there's only one day. You know, it's not like you can go race a couple of days. I guess you could. I mean, there may be minor tracks running the same week, but, you know, I think it's a long way to go for a couple races, but if you really are into racing and have the financial wherewithal, then yeah, it's pretty cool because I mean the racing venue itself is pretty amazing if you haven't seen it before, and to get that collection of horses, you know, it's an international Breeders' Cup in a way, not with as much depth in all the races, and it's just slightly different. But if you like horses and you like high quality horses and like getting a chance to see them all assembled on the same card doing different kinds of things, turf, dirt, short, long, it's a cool event for sure.
What I'd recommend if you're a racing fan looking for a bucket list type trip, you wouldn't be able to do it for this year, but plan for next year, do fly to Dubai via London and spend a few days out in the Cotswolds the week before and go to the Cheltenham Festival. And enjoy that, and then fly from London to Dubai and check the World Cup off that list.
And then go straight into the Triple Crown for the most part.
Pretty much. Get back, and it's a dead run. Steve Anderson revealed to us that he'll be live attending Cheltenham, doing a bunch of posts
always,
on DRF
man,
Live
always.
About that.
Yeah.
It's such a great thing. I'm going to be out. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to be out in California covering the Ultimate Betting Challenge. So I'll be getting up at whatever, 5 in the morning, to watch the races from England before heading out to the great race place. It'll be good. I'll be getting some good 12 to 15 hour days of gambling in out there that week.
It could be good.
One last question before we let you go, Marcus. I'm going to put you on the spot for another international horse, and we talk Triple Crown. One word answer, Lonnie, player or pretender?
Wait, who?
The Japanese tappet colt, Lonnie, A-L-A-N-I.
I thought you were going to ask about Polar River, the
or
Polar to the Oaks.
Well, then there's Polar
Lonnie,
River, too.
I know nothing about Lonnie, I got to tell you.
This is the steam horse of steam horses. Lonnie is now taking money, and he's a Japanese colt who is targeting the Triple Crown. He's taking money in the Derby futures.
The American Triple Crown.
Yes, I saw the William Hill for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Okay, this horse is 40-1 to win the Breeders' Cup Classic.
All that means is that some crazy people are betting on him, and they have to adjust the odds accordingly.
Right.
It doesn't mean that he has any shot whatsoever.
No, I know. That's why I was curious what your take was.
I only have a general take, and that's that the Japanese dirt horses, it's kind of like when American turf horses go to Japan. I mean, the Japanese dirt horses usually are overmatched when they face real dirt horses, like top-class dirt horses. The ones that they've sent for the World Cup have not performed spectacularly. There have been a couple that have come here that have done okay. As older horses, as a 3-year-old, I'd be highly skeptical.
Yeah.
Who was the other one you mentioned, Marcus?
Polar River. She is in the UAE, a filly. And again, you know, the competition has been... I think people are underrating the filly that she's whomped the last couple times, the Godolphin filly, whose name escapes me right now, because she was a Group 2 winner last year. She's not chopped liver. But at the same time, she's probably not really a dirt horse. But this filly, it's not just, I mean, it's the way she's won. But of course, you know, you're flattered when you're way better than everybody else and you're at the peak of your game. But I'm interested in her. She runs in the UAE Oaks. And then if that goes well, probably the UAE Derby. And then her trainer, Doug Watson, has already said, you know, that she deserves it to come to America to run on dirt. Now, and, you know, he used to work for Kieran McLaughlin, so she'd be a natural to maybe go into his barn. Whether that means come to America, you know, get some time off, point for Saratoga, or come to America, keep going, point for the Kentucky Oaks, I don't know. But I do think she's really talented.
All right, Marcus, thanks so much for all your insights. Always a pleasure having you on the show, and we hope to have you back very soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Marcus.
So we'll have just a couple minutes here before we bring in our next guest. And want to just put sort of a call out to the audience for, as we continue to do these shows in the sort of modified format you've been seeing the last few weeks, one thing I think might be a nice way to sort of segue between guests like this is to include some questions from the audience. We often get questions on Twitter. We can certainly incorporate some of those, or folks can specifically ask questions for us, maybe things that require a little bit more of a discussion that aren't going to be so easy to do in 140 characters. If you want to ask us those via Twitter, and we can do them on the DRF podcast, that might be a lot of fun. Also, just wanted to remind folks about this new DRF Bets promotion, Bet 200, Get 200. We talked about it a few weeks ago on the podcast, and we got a few details in how the bonus works. Did you get that info?
It's actually even better than that. It's bet 150, get 150, and then you get an extra $50 for free if you bet that in the first day that you sign up. So so you basically, if you bet 150, you get 200. If you deposit and bet in the first day, you get an extra free $50.
So. An excellent opportunity. And speaking of excellent opportunities, our next guest has been taking advantage of several of them. His name is Pete Dressens. We talked about him a little bit before earlier on the show and how he now has two qualifications for the NHC for next year as a rookie on the NHC Tour. So let's now welcome the Doc from the Rock, Pete Dressens. Pete, how are you doing today?
Very well, Peter. Thank you for calling.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Yeah, you sound great. You sound great. We've got a terrific graphic of you up on the screen for the folks watching on YouTube.
Dressed to the nines.
Natalie dressed in the in the paddock. I don't recognize the track in the background, but looking good. And you've been playing extremely well. Tell us a little bit about your attraction to contest play and why, after being a racing fan for a couple of decades, you decided to get involved in contests.
Okay, well, first of all, with the attire there, I got to thank my lady friend Linda. She's heavily into the social part of it all, which allows me to wager, and I appreciate that. But, you know, you have to dress, too. And she certainly fits the part, so I just try to play along. It's all a lot of fun. As far as the handicapping, you know, I've been playing races for a number of years, and it just started out as like an exacta better and stuff like that about 20 years ago when I finally started making a few bucks. And, you know, one thing just sort of led to another. In the contest, I kind of dabbled in with the BCBC. And, you know, I really would have liked to have played that contest because, one of Steve Bick's handicappers, Nick Tamaro, I like the exacta trifecta format, you know, occasional super if you feel really confident in the top three, but that's the way I play, and you know, just to pick courses to win in place, that I don't bet that way, but yeah, it is, it definitely is. And you know, look, I hit a couple of them that definitely helped the cause. And you know, it's, as I let you know in the in our interactions with the email, some of the information I got from Steve's show is really good. But, you know, ultimately, still, you got to pick those horses, and, you know, then they have to run for you. So
do you have to other players looking to make that transition? Maybe they're more exacta trifecta players, and then they go on NHCQualify.com, BCQualify.com, DRFQualify.com, and you see that, yeah, now I just have to pick one horse for this mythical $2 win in place. Does it change? I mean, obviously, it must change your handicapping. How do you choose which horse to play in that win place format?
Well, again, you know, you're going to cite a couple of sources, and I think Mr. Kinchin has said, look, you have to be successful.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the first time that I played a qualified, just whatever, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I was sitting at $99 with two guys ahead of me at 101 and another guy at 104. And there was one race to go, and it was the race that the horse Calculator had won. And he's a comebacking horse that had been on the Derby Trail last year. But his odds are even money. And you have to make the decision that if he wins and you play him, you're probably looking at $6, maybe some change. And if, you know, two of the players ahead of me, you know, didn't play him, then I'm going to pass them. And again, you know, it seems so simple, but number one, you have to make the bet, and number two, it has to come in. You know, anybody play long shots the whole time, but they do have to come in.
Strategy comes into play. Yeah, you have to, and it adjusts as the contest goes on, and it's something that a lot of players. I mean, it almost surprises me. I have a piece up today about one of the players who qualified when you did, Alan Denkinson. And he said he went and looked in the last race on NHC Qualify over the weekend, and he was surprised to see that there were several players in the chasing pack who played horses that wouldn't even get them there if those horses came in. He speculated maybe that's because people are putting in their picks and then they're going out to, you know, lunch or whatever, or dinner. They're not adjusting as they go along. But to me, that strategy that you're talking about with the decision to play Calculator there, that's what makes that format in particular fun. There's a lot of people are sort of playing checkers in terms of their strategy. And if you're on top of your game, you can play chess and have a chance to get an edge over people in a way other than, it's not just out picking them, it's out thinking them. Is that part of why you actually like that mythical format, even though you're more of a cash player by nature?
Well, obviously recently I don't have any problems with the format because it has come in. you know, I'd like to hit all 12 races. But you look at it, it's hard. What I've been doing much more recently is going back and checking out what the other guys have done. And I find it interesting that, even many of them that do qualify either for this or the BCBC, in three of the first four races, four of the first five races, they have zeros. And then they'll hit one. Then you start playing maybe a little bit differently because you're in the game. And then, you know, you feel confident taking maybe, you know, you're gonna say to yourself, if I'm going to bet this 4-1 shot and he does come in, then I'm probably looking at, you know, $14, maybe $16. Where does that put me? And you have to start thinking that way a little bit, but obviously it does help to be in the game.
You've talked a lot about. You go ahead.
But the little things that come up too. I mean, I've had a number of place bets. One was a fortunate one at Oakland, paid 14. But even the couple little guys, I hit $3, $4, $5. They do add up when you know they allow you to take the calculator in the last race.
No, that's a good point. All those points count. It's not just about the winners. It's about collections a lot of time, and even a small collection can be the difference between playing the horse you like late in the contest or having to reach and play a horse that may be your fourth or fifth choice or even worse. So I think that's a good point. Now, Pete, you've talked a lot about listening to the Bix Show specifically and hearing trainers and handicappers like Jay Privman and Marcus Hirsch and reading the things they write and making notes about what they say that helps your handicapping. Do you use a product like Formulator that has a notes database in it, or do you just sort of keep these notes in your head or in a notebook? How do you keep track of all the information you're getting from folks like those?
It's a little loose. I got to admit, I don't have the time to really, you know, pour over Formulator. This is a hobby for me. I work.
You're busy helping save people's lives. Come on, what's more important than getting horses?
49 weeks a year, I'm in the hospital. You know, and I got a son that I got to spend some time with, and then I have a relationship that, you know, I try to do the best I can with as far as maintaining time with that and all. Because, like I said, that you know, Linda's favorite thing is not wagering on the horses, but she does like to attend these events, which does help the cause. Definitely.
That's a win. That's a big win.
Yeah. It's a little, not a false statement, but you know, sometimes you hear people say in medicine, common things are common. And if a guy who has the expertise of say a Mike Welch or Jay Privman, if they say things that, you know, really stand out, I think Jay this week said, look, Steve Asmussen never runs his horses in 112 at Fairgrounds. And then, you know, two callers later, Marcus Hirsch is saying, not only that, he did those workouts when the track was considered slow. And then he makes the comment that he didn't think that Asmussen was going to run a gun runner here just as a prep. He came to win. You put all those things together, and then the horse is 5-1. It seems like that, you know, this is a, I don't want to say a no-brainer, but this is a really good way to go.
Yeah.
And you know, things like that. Like last year before the Derby, I think Mr. Welch really touted Dame Dorothy. And I think she went off at, 2-1, 3-1, because there was the Judy horse was in there that had won the Breeders' Cup. She wasn't the stone chalk. But if you played her in pick threes, and you know, you had, I believe Teppan was running that day. I couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Teppan was on the same card. That was the famous, right. we talked about it a lot on the podcast, the famous Jonathan Kinchin walks out with half the money at the track day. And those
right.
horses were all linked together for him.
But along those same lines, people were saying that some of Cassie's horses were running along with Teppan, who was training great. And, you know, I just saw the name in the program and said, well, I have to include these two. So, I mean, I didn't have Jonathan's stone cold pick three, but, you know, again, I had some of them, and you know, I did okay with that bet. And
you did some. You know, you did some cash betting on. You did some cash betting on Saturday as well, involving that that pick four sequence. I don't think we've said this Philly's name all day, even though we've alluded to her a few times. Venus Valentine, I imagine, being the key to it. One of the ones you heard Tom Amos talking about on the show. And what did you end up betting there? How did you attack that pick four?
Well, at that point, I was maybe starting to bite off a little bit more than I can chew, because I was at the Rock and I was wagering with some friends, and I was trying to do both the $21 BCBC qualifier and the NHC, because it was basically the same lineup of races. So I figured I could multitask and do all this stuff. And you know, at one point I just said, "Look, you got to slow down. So let's go with what we're going." You know, had studied, and I had done the whole Fairgrounds card and everything, and so I came up with a larger wager that I think was somewhere in the neighborhood of $80 or $90 for a 50-cent pick four. So that was one ticket, and then the smaller one, again, because of what Kirsch had said, that he really thought Jerusalem was the I think it was the chocolate ride or something was going to run real big.
Yep.
So I singled that one. The first leg, from what I had handicapped, the race kind of fell apart a little bit because, as I recall, there were two or three scratches.
There was. Yeah, so that was the I one had, the Daisy Devine.
I had a few. I think three was what my original pick was. And then I looked up at the board, and the number nine was 5-2 or 3-1. And I said, you know what? I don't have time to go over this again. I'm just going to trust the crowd. So I went deep there. I took five. And then I took what I thought was I did not like Aeroforce. I really liked Amos's other horse, the one that finished third.
Motom,
right. So that horse, I got that wrong. In the Philly race there, I took Asmussen's horse, who was the big chalk
stage play,
and right, and I took the bomber, and I had another horse in the leg. I'm trying to remember why I played that, but I just said, look, one of these three, if you know, I'm taking a flyer on the long shot, who I still, believe it or not, just thought was around 20-1. I made the
that's not unreasonable,
not playing the board. And not, you know, not noticing that the horse was 70-1 and doing like an all, which is, would have been like an $18 bet on an exacto, and I think I could have swung that. You know, it was just, I missed it, but I did have it, you know, in the pick four, fortunately. And also, I had seen.
What did that come back? What did that pick four come back?
The 50 center was 4,771, and I had that twice. And the pick three singling chocolate was, I think, 1,600. A short period of time, two races, I came back with five figures, and that always helps the cause.
That's great. We're getting close to the end of the show here, but I did want to ask you one more question. You've got these two qualifications. You're near the top of, if not at the top of the NHC Tour leaderboard. You're ahead in the NHCQ Cyberstar contest, where the player who wins the most points on NHC qualify through the year gets $10,000 and a shot at $1 million bonus. And then you're also in the lead in the rookie contest. The rookie contest, where you can win another $10,000. How seriously are you going to take these 3-year-long contests, and which ones are you going to go for?
Very seriously. And I even have a verbal commitment from Linda. That was very nice of her. She said, this is unheard of. You have a chance to win some money, so go for it.
That's awesome. That's great.
Again, it's just really, that's helpful.
We will be looking, for your name on the leaderboard. Good.
I'm going to keep playing. I'm going to try to get into an open. This information. I have to have a big operation next week. My right knee is shot, and I have to have it replaced. So there may be a downtime there, but I'm going to keep trying. The rookie thing is probably what I have the best chance at being most successful at, given my current position, and if I can just improve a little bit. Look, there's some really good guys out there, and You know, I went online the other night and looked up. I'm actually in 20th place, and there's a couple of guys with twice as many points that I have. I don't know how you get these points. It's only been a month.
That hasn't updated. That wouldn't have updated for if you're in 20th. It hasn't updated for your second win, I would think.
But I didn't know that.
That would have been before. So you have another big win on that. But Pete, we'll be looking for your name on the leaderboard. Hopefully your knee will be better. We could see you live at a contest like Saratoga. I imagine that's one of the nearer ones to you. I want to thank you so much.
Yes, for coming on the show. I would love to play that. And thank you very much for your interest. I appreciate you, Paul.
No problem, buddy. We'll be checking in with you throughout the year as you make a run at these various contests. Mike, any closing thoughts before we send it home?
No, I'm just looking forward to Jonathan in studio on Friday, and that should be a fun one as well.
Yeah, we're also going to have John Parada, the author, and I like to describe John as the guy who's had every job at the racetrack you can have. He'll be also helping us go over those public handicapper races. We'll be talking about his fantastic output of books in the last couple of years on Friday as well. But that's it for today. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal, for Mike Hogan, for Marcus Hirsch, for Pete Dressens. Thank you all for joining us, and we will be back here soon. Until then, may you win all your photos.